everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Fairy Conclave. This is episode 72. I'm your host, Alec. My pronouns are he, him, and today I have a very special guest joining me on this episode. It's Dan Sheehan. How are you doing today, Dan?
Doing good. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I am excited to have you here because I'm a big fan of your podcast, The Commander Sphere.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super fun recording that. Me and Rachel always have a blast just getting to, you know, talk about Magic every week. It's nice. Nice to have an excuse to talk about it more.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I really like how it's very, like, free form. You're definitely not serious at all, and I appreciate that a lot. I think it's really enjoyable.
I think it's our comedy backgrounds. We definitely were used to the podcast model of, like, oh, yeah, the podcast is about this, but really it's just us hanging out, which... You know, so far people seem to like, so, you know, I cross my fingers that they continue to like it, but it's been, we've had a great run so far.
Yeah, I love that. I particularly enjoyed your two-part episodes on which, like, ranking which planeswalkers were the most kissable and the best at kissing.
that was such a fun one to record. Anytime we, like, get to bust out the spreadsheet, and then just start adding up various, like, scores for things, it's just so fun.
So good. Yeah, so good.
I really enjoy it.
I agreed with most of your rankings in that episode, but the only one I would have to fight a little bit for was, I think Koth has something a little bit like a heart of gold in there that I think might give some extra bonus points. It might be made of rocks, but, you know, there's something there.
Yeah, being made of stone will always set you back a little bit, but I'm willing to believe that that Koth has it in him. You know, revolutions require fervor, and I think that could lead to, you know, some good kissing skill.
That is true. Yeah, you definitely pick up some skills here and there.
Next year we'll have to amend the list with all the new planeswalkers and stuff too. It's there's always new ones. We'll need to, you know, make sure we keep a running list.
Yeah, that would be a fun idea also. And if there are any planeswalkers that add, like, new colors or anything, like, I bet Obnixilis having some red now probably adds a couple spice points here. Some pizzazz.
Yeah, he was among our worst, so there's really nowhere for him to go but up.
That's true.
And yeah, now he's wearing, like, pinstripe suits and stuff. He might have some hope yet.
Yeah, that's true. The style points for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, well, yeah, I I'm glad that you're here, and yeah, happy to do a podcast episode where I can interview you about one of your commander decks. Yeah, and before we get into that, though, let's do our community spotlight for the episode. So we like to shout out another content creator in the community every episode and give their links in the episode description so you can go check them out, too. And yeah, so today I'm going to shout out Lynn Frank, who... is on YouTube at just Lynn Frank, and also on Twitter at Lynn V Frank. So definitely go check them out because they just launched a new Spell Table Commander gameplay series on YouTube, and it's really good. There's one episode so far, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. And yeah, I really liked the way it was set up and the guests that they had on the episode. And yeah, I loved it. So definitely go check out Lynn's content and yeah, and social medias. Let's get into the Commander Deck interview, which I'm very excited for. I love doing these because, for one thing, I love talking to people about Commander, and I think when you ask somebody questions about their deck, you just get a lot of insight into their personality, and they really kind of, like, put their heart and soul into these deck lists, which I think is so fun to talk about. So, yeah, let's kick things off by... telling us who your commander is and what inspired you to build this deck in the first place.
All right. So the deck I'm walking through today is my Atog-Atog deck. Atog-Atog has been kind of a meme for most of its life. Even the card itself feels sort of like this very self-aware little jab at Magic's own history. But when I played growing up, I played like all through... like a lot of the Onslaught block and then like Mirrodin and Onward and all that. And so Atogs were like around a lot. My early collection consisted mostly of discarded cards that my buddy's older brothers had played with. So we had a heavy Atog presence, and I always got a kick out of Atog-Atog as a card. And just the idea that Atogs eat everything and Atog eats Atogs is just so funny to me. The deck's name is Having My Friends for Dinner. And so Perfect. It's basically just your goal here is to try to buff Atog up to as high a power as you can possibly get it, and then either swing with it for, you know, lethal commander damage, hit a Chandra's Ignition, or a bunch of other like power themed win cons that can land the plane. It is a weird little deck that's very good at taking out one person. So it sort of functions like racing to load a gun and then just trying to like keep everyone away from you until you only have one opponent left. it is very, very silly, but surprisingly functional given the card we're dealing with here.
Nice. Yeah, this one is definitely a pretty unique five-color commander, but there's so much to love about it. I think it's hilarious that it's five colors. I'm not even sure what Atog's colors are normally, they're normally in.
So Atog's have been in every other color.
Okay.
So the idea was like, before Commander, Atog was basically an Atog commander for like Atog tribal, which there aren't quite enough Atogs to pull off like a straight up Atog tribal deck. Like this deck runs as many as I can, but there are still a handful that I cut. Like I cut four Atog, who is essentially you can sacrifice forest to pump it. So if you're listening and you don't know about Atogs, first of all, how dare you? Every Atog basically is usually a cheap 1/1, 1/2, 2/2, something typically small that allows you to sacrifice a permanent of a specific type. And then it buffs it by like either +2/+2, plus in some cases more. Like for example, the base Atog, like the Atog that started it all, is a 2 to cast 1/2 that you can sack an artifact to give it +2/+2. Or Atog does enchantments. Lith Atog, you can sacrifice lands or artifacts to give it +1/+1. Megatog is kind of an odd one in the bunch. It's a 6 to cast 3/4 that you can sack an artifact to give it +3/+3. So they all function more or less like that. But the base number of Atogs is quite limited. And so you have to kind of get creative from a deck building standpoint because there's just not enough Atogs to reliably draw into more than a couple per game if you're not heavily tutoring.
Gotcha. Honestly, it seems like a very solid commander strategy, just because having sac outlets for different permanent types is always useful. Like you can always do something with that. And then yeah, just the idea that you have a sac outlet for those sac outlets is kind of incredible. I love that so much.
There's been periods before where it's run Barren Glory as a win con. Because Barren Glory allows you to if you have no permanents or cards in hand at the beginning of your upkeep, you win the game. Nice. And so you can essentially, on your opponent's end step, use all your Atogs to eat all your permanents, lands included, discard all your cards, and then use Atog to eat all your Atogs, and then Atog can eat itself. And Ooh. So you can completely empty your board and swing big to try and win with Barren Glory. But I just found I was never getting to a period into a position where I was able to actually like even go for it, because everyone just sees win the game on a card and, you know, becomes rightfully nervous. So it was not getting to show its stuff quite like I dreamed.
Gotcha. Yeah, I definitely could see the like greediness of wanting to do that. It would be extremely tempting, but I could see that being in practice. You'd probably find a lot less situations than you'd want where you'd actually want to go ahead and sacrifice everything you have.
Yeah, it can definitely cause some trouble if you do it at the wrong time, or if an opponent knows to like hold whatever their, you know, enchantment removal is until after you've done that, which is like a real mean play. But you know, if somebody's going for the win, you gotta try to stop them. So it's, you know, it's a very, very risky play, which is ultimately why it hasn't ended up in this list. There's been a lot of iterations of this list, but the current one has been the most efficient. So I am typically hesitant to make large scale changes unless there's a card that I feel like is just like a true game changer for it.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit. Could you talk us through some of the changes or like learnings that you've had as you've played this deck over the years?
Yeah, for sure. So it was one of the first decks I built in Commander. I pulled together all the Atogs, and then I pulled together every alt wincon card I could find.
Ooh, that's fun.
So Revelin Riches was in there, you know, all the like Felidar Sovereign, Test of Endurance. So the idea was that the deck was, it was kind of like a living meme where every single thing you did was like a distraction to hide another thing you were trying to do. And so it was, because I was a new deck builder and I was, it wasn't a new player, but I was new to playing Commander. I definitely didn't have like the skill to make the deck really good. So I tried to just fill it with as many like out of left field picks as I could. And so the original list was for me fun, but for anyone that played with it could get kind of annoying because it like, you know, suddenly there's just like a Revelin Riches on board and you got to deal with that. And then, oh, he just cast Approach to the Second Sun. You got to deal with that. And then at a certain point, I realized that the most fun I had was pumping up Atog. It was like the deck was at its most fun when I was like making Atog really big and then casting a Fling, essentially. And like Revelin Riches, you know, feels outright bad because like 10 treasures is nothing in the current meta. And so I got rid of, I think, almost every single alt wincon card. I don't think there are any, because not even Barren Glory is in here at the moment. I'm looking through my like closers on Moxfield here. And yeah, so it's all power-based wincons now. So the deck went from being like win the game tribal to power matters. And it really found its rhythm there. Just trying to like efficiently buff Atog while also making as many permanents as possible so that the Atogs have something to eat has thus far been making for like a much more efficient list with this. So the second iteration has definitely felt a little more focused, a little more me. My co-host at Commander Sphere, Rachel, and good friend, obviously, and her boyfriend and my other good friend, Aaron David, they helped me work through the list and just like refine it because Rachel has like an encyclopedic card knowledge and was just like, here's this weird, you know, thing from forever ago that you hadn't even thought of. So with a few tune-ups like that, it really got it into a position where it feels like it can actually win, which is rare for a deck like Atog.
That's awesome. I talked about this a lot on a recent episode I did, but I really love the kind of like community aspect of just the deck building part of Commander. Yeah, sitting down with a few friends and asking for help on a deck can just, it can be so much fun. I love that that is a thing that is kind of a big part of this format.
Yeah, and it's fun to like, to sit down and bring an idea to some friends, but also to like see your friends looking through your list and like the way that people can like will carefully go through a list that you created and not just start like slapping in like, oh, you don't need this, you need this, you don't need this, you need this, like understanding that you still want your fingerprint on the deck. Like it's so nice when like a good friend can just like kind of know what you're going for and expand on what you had in mind to begin with. And that feels very much like what happened with this one, because it's like there are cards like Lifeline that just were not on my radar. That when Rachel showed it to me, Lifeline is whenever a creature is put into a graveyard and a creature is in play, return that creature to your from your graveyard to play at the end of turn, which synergizes beautifully with the Atogs, because then it's like, you know, unless you're completely emptying your board, as long as there is one thing on the graveyard, you get all your Atogs back at the end of turn, which doesn't save your, you know, other permanents that you sacrifice, but, you know, it can save your commander. It can save a lot of things. So it's just little stuff like that has over the years made this deck just like so much more fun to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like what you said about, giving and getting advice that is more about trying to add on to what the person is trying to do rather than trying to change it. Yeah, I think that's really important. And it's always nice because there are at least a billion cards out there and everyone remembers different cards for different things. So, yeah, it's really helpful to have somebody else put their eyes on the deck and be like, oh, I remember like a couple weird cards from, I don't know, some set a while ago that you could try in this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it makes a big difference to be able to have friends to consult.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's super important. And also, yeah, if anyone out there wants any advice, that's one of my favorite things to do on Twitter is talk about commander decks. So, yeah, always happy to do that. Cool. I had a thought about something you said earlier, but it's just completely gone in my brain, so I'll probably remember it in a couple of minutes. Yeah. But
I have been there.
But yeah, I'll move on to the next question. So yeah, we've talked about it a little bit, but what exactly about this deck just gives you the most joy? Like the thing that keeps you coming back to play it again and again?
The single play I think that this deck makes that I enjoy most is... I'm trying to decide. It's tough here. It's like choosing between my children, but hitting either a Chandra's Ignition or a Kedis type effect is very fun. I mean, ultimately, the best moment in this deck is when you realize you have the gun. I joke with my friends a lot that a Tog-a-Tog is just like, you know, it's like waving a gun around where you're just like, nobody come near me. It's like an old Western or something where you're just like sitting there and you're just like, I, you know, hands up, everything. I've got control now. And like, that is how this deck feels, is when you have like a Tog and a Tog-a-Tog on board with like, you know, 10 treasures and a Fling or a Chandra's Ignition in hand or something. And you know, like, okay, at instant speed, I can kill a player, and you then can go into every political interaction basically saying like, listen, someone can try to take out my permanence, but whoever is first to break that, whatever peace we have going on here is going to be very bummed out. It just puts you in like a really fun negotiation position because everyone also knows that you can't do that three times. Right. So everyone's like kind of, it creates this game of chicken at the table where everyone's like, all right, who's going to like call the bluff? Because then sometimes you don't have it. Sometimes you're like, oh, Chandra's Ignition is sorcery speed. So if they try to kill me during their turn, I got nothing. But then sometimes you have, you know, a Fling in hand, and then, you know, somebody will try to call your bluff and be like, you know, okay, well, I have a counterspell for the Fling. It's like, oh, that's fine. Like, I have, you know, like a Kozul's Fury that I can cast instead. Like, and so it's, you know, it has so many redundancies and weird little ways to try and eke out that victory. That it's just like, it's a truly surprising deck, especially against people who have never played against it before. Like, to be able to, you know, I've had it Chandra's Ignition for 112 damage on, you know, ooh, like turn 7 or 8 or something, which is not, you know, it's not going to make any waves at a, like, you know, super competitive table. But for a casual deck, the fact that it can do that with a meme commander is, I'm fairly impressed by what this deck can pull off when it wants to. And so yeah, I would say that's definitely the thing I like most is just knowing that I have my engine set up and like being able to like politically maneuver like with that confidence.
Yeah, I really like the political aspect of this because Chandra's Ignition can get all of the players at the same time, but that's kind of rare. The other Flings are like, okay, I can use this, but only on one person. So I bet it's pretty interesting, the different situations where you have to try to decide which opponent you're going to use it on, and then the timing of that when they're instants.
Yeah, so I guess to walk anybody listening through, there are a handful of ways this deck like actually goes in for the kill. There's Burning Anger, which is an enchantment that gives the creature tap target creature, or this creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player, which is really great because then it's on board. People know you're not bluffing, and even if they have enchantment removal, as long as a Tog-a-Tog doesn't have summoning sickness, you can still do it at instant speed. So you have Burning Anger, Chandra's Ignition, which hits everyone for the creature's power. Dying Wish, enchanted creature. Whenever enchanted creature dies, target player loses X life and I gain X life, where X is its power. So that one's more insurance than anything else. It's basically to like make sure that somebody knows, like, all right, if you kill my commander, I'm going to buff him up to be like, a 30-30, and you're going to lose 30 life and I'm going to gain 30 life. Essence Harvest is essentially the same thing. Target player loses X and I gain X, where X is the greatest power among creatures I control. Then you have Fling, which is, you know, why the effect is called a Fling effect, where you cast the instant, sack a creature, deals damage equal to its power. Gravitic Punch is a sorcery, target creature, deals damage equal to its power to target player. Gravitic Punch is a great finish because it doesn't require sacrificing. Like, if you can have that and a fling in hand, you've got, you know, two players dead to rights. Castle's Fury is just like another fling effect. Then you have Kedis, Emberclaw Familiar, who makes it so whenever a commander you control deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to each other opponent. So that's another way to like one-shot the board. And then Soul's Fire is target creature you control and play deals damage equal to its power to target creature or player for three. So yeah, there are essentially nine spells that, you know, if in hand or on board, can help you make sure that you can kill a player very, very quickly. Not all of them are at instant speed, but most are at instant speed. And the ones that aren't at instant speed are that way because they are, you know, very, very valuable. Like a Chandra's Ignition at instant speed would be too good to exist.
Yes.
So yeah, it's got a lot of ways of closing it down. And so like the dream hand for this deck is that you've got like, you know, a couple of lands and a piece of like a ramp piece or a piece of fixing, you know, a good solid piece of card draw, and then one of your like fling, one or two fling effects, and then an Atog itself would be just the best.
Nice. Yeah, I really like the fling strategy just because it requires a lot of kind of like knowledge of what is happening on the board. So I bet when you've played against people multiple times and like your friend's decks that you've played against before, I bet you could get some really spicy kind of knowledge from what they're doing so that you can decide, yeah, when to cast your spells. And
As a Magic player, I'm not typically like the type who has like a Rube Goldberg machine going on his board. Mm-hmm. Like I usually am just like, I'm going to make a lot of tokens, or I'm going to make a lot of creatures, or I'm going to doing like an Aristocrats thing. And this is one of my only decks where it's just like, okay, so I'm like tapping this for, you know, two, sacking this to that, then tapping this to sack to like, it is kind of like a little Rube Goldberg machine at times where it's like, yeah, I have to know my line so that if someone tries to kill me, I can quickly explain why that would be a bad idea. And so it's very like it's not like a lot of my other decks, which I think is why it's fun for me.
Yeah, it's very unique. There's kind of a like putting all your eggs in one basket thing going on here that I also really appreciate because it, it's just kind of, yeah, it's fun to kind of see if you can make it work out in the situation.
Yeah, the deck is definitely, it is definitely a deck that puts all of its eggs in one basket, for better and for worse, where it's like, you got a bunch of eggs. That's great. But if anything happens to those eggs, you are holding a whole lot of nothing. It can make it really, really tough to recover. Like board wipes are bad for this deck. It's like, if you've got what you need on board, you can like try to maneuver around it. But like the dream is that when you go for the kill, you have, and you know, there's not a lot of these effects like printed right now, but cards like Lifeline, Faith's Reward, and Cosmic Intervention that can like bring back to the battlefield permanents that were put into the graveyard that turn. So then you can reset your board minus tokens after having done your big play. But if a board wipe hits before you're ready, if someone early board wipes, like the worst thing that can happen to a Togetog is another player with like a token deck or something like pops off too quickly and like gets someone to drop a board wipe like right after you just cast your commander. Because when a Togetog is costed at seven, this deck moves slow because you're already spending all this mana just trying to like get your rocks into play, get your mana fixing set up. Like the land base for this deck is insane, and it's mostly because it is a five color deck, and it, you know, it's an Atog deck. It needs to be able to run like consistently. So like you can't have too many lands coming into play tapped, but like also I run a lot of artifact lands because I want to be able to eat them. It's just, you know, it's a complicated little mess.
I love it. Yeah, it's really, there's a lot going on here when you kind of dive into it. I really like the, it looks like you have a bit of a treasures sub theme, which makes a ton of sense because you can use them for any of your five colors or have one of the like artifact Atogs eat them for sacrifice fodder.
They are a great dual purpose because you know, treasures can fix you, or you know, I love in this deck that when I drop down a Dockside Extortionist, it's not to like, you know, loop it or do anything infinite. It's mostly just like, Dockside Extortionist is this weird card for me, because on one hand it does a lot of very busted stuff and I've seen it get out of hand, but on the other hand, it is both the most egregious treasure card ever printed and also the best treasure insurance ever printed. So it's like, if one of my opponents has 23 treasures or something like that, I can drop a dockside and now I have 23 artifacts, which means if I have anything, any of my togs that eat artifacts, I can pump it up, you know, like that at 23 would be 46 points to a Togatog, which then, you know, makes a tog to a tog, and then a Togatog would become like a 51-51 at instant speed. That can happen. So it's like making that many treasures just to eat them feels like a flex, and it's part of the reason I love having a card like Dockside in this deck, because I like using cards that are powerful in weird or dumb ways, and this feels like it applies to that.
Yeah, it's always nice when you can put cards like Dockside or even Smothering Tithe that are, people just throw them in all over the place because they can, but this has a little like extra synergy that I guess kind of like justifies that you're playing these kind of like extremely powerful cards.
Smothering Tithe has been on the bubble for a bit just because it is like, it can be so oppressive. And also, like, in terms of fixing, like, the Triomes have been more helpful for fixing than, like, Smothering Tithe has. By turn four, if I'm still hard up for colors, like, playing a Smothering Tithe is not going to help me because it's going to draw a ton of attention to my board. It's mostly there for, in the later game, if people are drawing a ton, then I can be making artifacts and then further, like, building up my insurance policy where it's just like, all right, like, you can draw, but, like, keep in mind, a Togatog is only getting bigger. And so, like, but I don't know. Yeah, it flags so much threat. Dockside, I don't really mind as much. I kind of end up on the side of the Dockside defenders a lot. Like, I don't necessarily think it... it is a very powerful card, and I'll never try to pretend otherwise, but I don't think it necessarily needs a ban. Whereas, like, Smothering Tithe, I think, can slow down game states a lot, so that's why I frequently consider cutting it, but... anything that makes artifacts in this deck is just super useful, and the fact that it can make a handful per turn if an opponent's drawing a ton is just nice.
Yeah, I mean, it totally makes sense, but I also understand the not wanting to ask if someone wants to pay the two every 4 seconds.
So. Exactly. That's like the, you know, the real pain of it. And so it's a complex card for me. I've definitely thought about, especially with this most recent set, I've thought about swapping it out for Bootlegger's Stash.
Oh.
Because Bootlegger's Stash has costed it 6, so it feels slightly more, you know, quote-unquote fair. And then it gives lands you control tap, create a treasure, and being able to just, like, fully tap my board and then make 7 artifacts just, like, super good, because then like to be able to turn your land, like, every turn anything you have left over, turning it into treasure, which then both pumps your commander or can be used to cast instants, like, it just makes the board more unpredictable, which is the environment in which this deck thrives.
I could definitely see a pretty solid debate between Bootlegger's Stash or Smothering Tithe.
I think it depends on where the community lands on Bootlegger's Stash. I think if people end up being as annoyed by it as they are by Smothering Tithe, I probably wouldn't swap it. But if it ends up being... My prediction is that Bootlegger's Stash is going to be like Nyx Bloom Ancient, where everyone was really afraid of it when it got previewed, and then you see it in like 2 or 3 decks over the course of the next year. Just because, like, it's a 6-drop, and so when you drop it, you're probably... not getting a ton of value off at that turn, so it has to make it around a whole rotation before you get a chance to turn land, you know, lands into treasure. And even then, it's just like you still need to tap a land to do it. And so I think it's very specific strategies will benefit from it. So I don't think it's going to be super oppressive. Whereas Smothering Tithe, you know, gets kind of an instant feel bad from folks. So we will see.
Yeah, that's a good thing to be conscious of, is kind of community saltiness, I guess.
Because for a deck like this, it requires staying under the radar, and so if you are dropping down, like I would never, if I played a Dockside and then drew a Smothering Tithe, I would probably hold the Smothering Tithe all game.
That's fair. Yeah,
because I just don't want that amount of threat directed at me. Like if I drop down one of those cards, you can say to the table, like, Yeah, it's a talkie-talkie. He wants as many artifacts to eat as he can. If you drop down a second, even though it's still true that I'm just trying to make as many artifacts as I can eat, people are still, especially if you're not playing with like close friends, people are still going to assume like, okay, like this guy has a plan because he's making so much free mana. And even if they are friends who know the deck, they're going to know like, okay, that is so many artifacts. Like if he Chandra's Ignitions, like the game is just over. So, you know, I try to be tactful about how many of those cards that flag that type of threat I drop down.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember I put Old Gnawbones in a deck after that came out, and playing it one time, it immediately, even though it wasn't maybe as good as it looked, just immediately the table was like, wow, it's time for you to die. Like, there's so much resentment toward that. So I just took it out afterwards. I didn't really need it. I just thought it was nice value, but...
I'm working on a deck right now that's Ginny Fae. The one who can take any token you make and turn it into a cat or a dog, and I'm just filling it with all the most busted treasure cards. But the idea is the deck never actually makes a treasure. It just makes cats and dogs.
That's fun.
And so it's like, yeah, it's Old Gnawbone, but instead of getting 10 treasures, I'm going to get 10 cats. Like, that's... the idea is like taking these scary cards and kind of memeing them a little bit. So we'll see if that deck, you know, doesn't get hated off the board because I still feel like people aren't going to believe me. But that's like half my decks are me just being like, I promise this is funnier than it is efficient. And then people being like, all right, this is Magic though.
Yeah, that's me. I have an Atraxa Sagas deck.
Oh, that's fun.
Which I think ever since the recent Kamigawa set with a whole bunch of sagas, there have been more people building Atraxa sagas, but yeah, it's always an interesting discussion when I'm talking about kind of the pregame strategies and what we're going to play, and I'm like, I'm playing Atraxa, and I know what you're thinking, but don't worry, it's just full of sagas that, like, most of them are not great, but Atraxa is the commander, which, you know, is a thing. So yeah, it's always fun to have discussions like that. I also like the idea of replacing all your treasures with cats though, because they're 3/1s, right? So if you make 10 treasures, that's like 30 power on the board all of a sudden.
Yeah Well, I think the dogs are 3/1s with vigilance and the cats are 2/2s with haste, so it kind of just depends what you want. But yeah, I thought it'd be fun to have that deck go for like ETB effects. Just the idea of essentially with like a war storm surge creating like a cat storm. Ooh. Is really funny to me. Where it's just like, oh yeah, I played a Brass's Bounty, and you know, or something like that. Or, you know, just docksiding for a bunch. And then it's just like, instead of me getting a bunch of treasures, it's just like, I get, you know, 25 cats, everybody takes, you know, a bunch of damage. And like, yeah, it just seems very, very fun to me. So that's another one I've been working on.
I really like that concept. So yeah, maybe in a year from now I'll be interviewing you on an episode about that deck.
Yeah, we'll see how people like it. I'm still scared of people have a very guttural response to Old Gnawbone in particular. So we'll see how that goes.
Sweet. I just remembered the thing I forgot that I was going to ask about earlier. Which was, you mentioned this deck kind of started out with a whole bunch of alternate win conditions in this deck.
Yeah.
And I had a deck like that once, and it kind of gave me this like love-hate relationship with alternate win cons. It was like a Kenrith 5-color. I just had all the win conditions I could put in there. And yeah, I just didn't find it very satisfying because I'm like, okay, here's this one thing, and... I agree with what you said earlier that it kind of isn't the most satisfying way to play because people get really overly scared about your enchantments that say win the game on them. But then also, if you do win the game off of one, it's kind of like, oh, okay, I guess we play again like next game.
Yeah. I've had games where it was really fun, like casting an Approach of the Second Sun can be fun because it does put everybody on this like timetable where they're like, okay, once he draws like 6 cards, like we better have something, like but then there were other times where it was just like, oh wait, like Revel in Riches was the biggest offender of this, of just like, oh shit, I win, Like, I have 10 treasures. Like I feel like that card needs an errata at this point. Like, it's so easy to accidentally put together 10 treasures.
That's true. I have a Kalain treasure stack, which isn't... when I first built it, which was only, less than a year ago, the treasure cards at the time, there are, of course, a few good ones in red and black, but it was still, it wasn't very strong. It was still just, I don't know, it wasn't very strong. But now I've already, this most recent set, I'm changing out, 10 cards, and I think it's going to be a little stronger than I want it to be after all these new treasure cards. But, I can totally see that. Revel in Riches is one of the ones where I almost wish it just didn't have the win condition thing on it, because I would still play it.
Yeah, it would be great on its own, but
it's
tough.
Wild. Didn't want to get too sidetracked on the treasures. No, but yeah, it's applicable to this deck. I think it's cool that it has kind of multiple purposes besides just mana fixing.
Yeah, they've become kind of like a contentious part of the Commander meta, so it feels like that conversation is very closely tied to this deck, because treasures are what made it viable in the first place. Before it was just like, oh, well, where am I getting my artifacts from? Like, am I, rocks are helpful, but if having 3 or 4 artifacts doesn't really give you that loaded gun that you need, whereas, having 12 does. And so, yeah, treasures are so crucial to this deck. So I do have to watch where my line is to not flag too much threat.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I think we talked a little bit about the deck's weaknesses, that it's maybe weak to kind of board wipes. You have some spells to kind of counteract that, getting things back.
Yeah, I have some ways of getting around it. But yeah, early game board wipes can be tough, like any sort of tax effect or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Anything that makes stuff a little bit more expensive, or just any... I guess that's about it. Anything that makes it more expensive, anything that forbids me from sacrificing things for value. A lot of stuff that can hit other decks. I would say for this deck in particular, it gets hit hardest not when it is the threat, but when someone else is the threat and the board is getting wiped a lot. Because if someone forces you to fire the gun before... Because if someone board wipes, you're either going to lose everything and get no value off it, or you can just use your fling and try to kill somebody. And usually the answer is to go after whoever did the board wipe, but also sometimes they're board wiping because the board needed it. And so it's it forces you to use it before you have your target selected, which can flag a lot of hate your way, because then usually you're also not quite as set up as you wanted to be, which means you're not quite killing someone, but you're getting them down to 10, which usually makes somebody see red and just kind of come after you. So it's a deck that if it gets attacked too early in the game while it's still setting up, that can cause some trouble for it, which is why it is definitely what I would consider a casual deck. I wouldn't call it low power, but I would say it's the type of deck where if someone thinks they're going to win before, turn 5 or 6, I probably will not take out a Tog-a-Tog.
That makes a lot of sense. I definitely oftentimes have this guilty feeling casting a board wipe, because it's usually only because of one or two, maybe two players doing stuff I need to get rid of. And then, there'll always be one other person over there that's just kind of trying to set up and stay with it. And I'm I'm sorry, but all of your creatures are about to die too. Just
yeah. Only so much you can do. That's why it's nice to run a mix of removal that's targeted and, board wipes and stuff. But at the end of the day, you got to just try to stay alive to win the game. So, as much as it sucks to hit somebody while they're down, it's sometimes the only thing you can do.
It's true. It's true. Speaking of, besides treasure cards that we've gone through, are there any other kind of notable cards that fill maybe more generic roles of a commander deck, but that are more unique to this deck?
Sure. The generic stuff in here is probably in the ramp category. I use pretty much every signet I can wedge into this thing, Arcane Signet, Boros Signet, Dimir, Chromatic Lantern, Izzet Signet, Orzhov, Rakdos, Skyclave Relic. Skyclave Relic is a really fun piece of tech in this, because you can get 2 more artifacts off it if you draw it late game and kick it. I would say the big pieces of generic tech in here that are extra useful are probably the artifact tap lands from Modern Horizons 2. They enter tapped, which is kind of a bummer for a, you know, a tapped dual land is not fun. But they're indestructible, so they don't get hit by artifact board wipes, which is key. And then they're also just like little extra food for a Togatog. So those are like kind of nice generic pieces of tech. I love that Khazal's Fury has a land on the back, so it's just like one of my land counts is also a fling. And then I'm trying to think of like what the generic pieces are here. I mean, the Tireless Tracker and Provisioner both kind of serve the purpose of making tokens. Academy Manufacturers, the same deal. And then a real fun one is... where's the spell? I'm looking through the list right now for it. Treacherous Blessing is really fun in this deck. When it enters the battlefield, I draw three cards, and then whenever I cast a spell, I lose one life. If it becomes the target of a spell or ability, sacrifice it.
Nice.
It's great because you just pay three, draw three, and then you eat it. And then you don't have to, you know, lose three life, lose life every time you cast a spell.
That's great,
which is really, really nice. There is a, there are a couple of like Power Matters cards that are particularly potent in here. You've got your Chameleon Colossus. Choose Your Weapon is a fun little piece of tech from AFR. It just doubles a creature's power and toughness until end of turn. Ronus does the same thing. Unleash Fury. I'm trying to think of like the most generic stuff. I think that covers the bulk of it.
Yeah, I like that. Choose Your Weapon also can just randomly get rid of your opponent's Atraxa if you need it to, which is
kind of funny. Five damage to something flying is it does not hurt to have in the, you know, in the pocket.
Yeah, nice. Okay, I really like some of these just like little value things that are extra good in this deck. Yeah, Treacherous Blessing is a card I kind of always want to test out, but it's hard unless you're basically your commander has a way to get rid of it, and which there are tons of ways in this deck you can get rid of it. So yeah, that's I really
yeah
like
that. Same deal with Standstill, where it's like with Standstill, when a player plays a spell, you sack it and each opponent draws three cards. Usually if you cast it, someone cracks it by your turn, but if they don't and you find yourself in the position where you need to get rid of Standstill, you can usually have an Itog on board that will eat it. And then nobody gets to draw off it.
Okay, I really like that. Very political. It's,
exactly. Like, there's a lot of, like, enchantments you can put in this deck, or, like, permanents in general that have these negative effects that you can kind of circumvent just by eating them, which is flavorfully just so funny. The idea is just like, oh, I'm not going to suffer the downside because I'm going to eat it.
I think that's really cool. A lot of those cards, it's kind of hard to find places to use them effectively, but yeah, this deck seems incredibly perfect for that type of effect. Yeah, I like that a lot. Okay, so I mean, I feel like this might just be the entire deck, but do you have any specific pet cards in this deck that you just can't resist playing because you love them so much?
I mean, the commander is definitely that, where it's just like I've forced this deck so many times where it tells you, every time you build this deck, it tells you it's not good, but you never know. Like, I'm still hoping at some point we get another set of Atogs, either in, like, an unset or something.
Yeah.
That would really, like, be a game changer for this. I would say, like, the biggest pet card that I try to wedge in besides the commander itself, I mean, I guess there's not a lot of... With the commander being so goofy, like, everything kind of serves a purpose otherwise. Like, even some of the Atogs have been on the verge of getting cut before. But I would say, if I had to choose, like, an MVP of, like, the card in this deck that, like, I really always want to put in there. I'm trying to think. It's hard. I love them all so much.
Yeah, there's so many good ones. And the art on the Atogs especially.
Yeah, right. Like, they're just so fun. Like, I think the Atog, I guess that's probably the best answer for the pet cards that, like, a lot of the Atogs have been on the cutting board before where I'm like, do I really need, like Phantatog, where it's like sack an enchantment, it gets +1/+1, discard a card from my hand, it gets +1/+1. because like that one's better when you have Barren Glory in the deck and you need to be able to dump your hand. Or like Sacratog is the same thing, where it's like you can sacrifice an artifact and it only gets +1/+1, or you remove two cards in your graveyard from the game and it gets +1/+1. Like those two in particular are very bad. But they've managed to stick around because it's an Atog deck and it feels like it should have the Atogs. Even though ultimately when push comes to shove, I am typically only looking for Atog, and Megatog, potentially Oratog. But the others are more on the bubble, but I like to keep them in because I like to keep the family together, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it totally makes sense. Something about these, it's kind of funny too, looking at all the different arts for these, because it's very much back in the day when the art direction was much more up to the artists, I think, because it looks like an Atog is a different type of, like, they look so different each art to art, but I kind of love that. I think it's just, like, very quirky of them to have, I don't know, the Fantatog looks much more like a frog kind of thing. But then you look at Megatog, it's like, wait a second.
They oscillate between like frogs, lizards, and like monsters from hell.
Yes.
They really don't seem to have like a middle ground. Now that I think about it, I guess if Megatog, like because they reprinted a Tog on Mirrodin. That was, I believe, I'm looking at the printings right now. Yeah, because I think they're Dominarian until they got the reprint on Mirrodin. And the Mirrodin art is gross. They look really weird.
Yes.
But if Atogs were canonically on Mirrodin, that means that they should still be on New Phyrexia, which means if we ever go back to New Phyrexia, which it seems like that's what they want to do at some point, it would lead to potentially completed Atogs, which I would be tickled to see that. So we'll see if we ever get it.
I can't even imagine what like monstrosity that would look like, but I would love to see it.
It would be horrifying, just a nightmare. Fingers crossed.
I love that. I have a friend in my playgroup, Livy, who his favorite creature type is Mirror, and so it's kind of always been a thing for us that we're like, okay, this year we're gonna get our return to Mirrodin / New Phyrexia storyline, so we can get more Mirror involved in this. So yeah, maybe when that day comes, we'll also get more Atog cards.
Yeah, it could happen.
I love it. It's definitely, it's every year we're like, it's building up to something.
Yeah, it's they keep adding just like a little bit more to it, which I really appreciate.
It's true. Okay, so considering more of just the strategy of the deck, what one card in the deck do you think is the MVP or like the most synergistic card that you want to have every time you play?
Aside from like the obvious, like the win cons, you know, because obviously you always want to see like a Chandra's Ignition or a Fling. I think Cosmic Intervention is my favorite new add to this. Cosmic Intervention, you can foretell it for two, which is really crucial. The fact that this can just sit on the board, you know tap two early game and just kind of like get it out of like the world, you know, it can't be discarded, it just sort of is existing outside the game, and then for two at any time you can, it's because it's an instant, you can cast, and it says if a permanent you control would be put into a graveyard from the battlefield this turn, exile it instead. Return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So this allows you to fire the Atog gun without any real punishment. Like, sure, you'll lose your treasure tokens that you've generated, but, you know, if you have, like, you know, a bunch of actual permanents on board that you're sacrificing, like a bunch of Atogs, like your sac outlets remain, which means you can rebuild fairly easily. And there are certain things that if you've sacrificed them and they pop back to the board, like if you have Mirror Entity on the board, you can make it so the Dockside Extortionist comes back and then you get all your treasures back. So there's like a lot of stuff you can do with a Cosmic Intervention that would allow you to like get some extra value off your creatures. But even at its base level, it just lets you, because like this deck, if it loses a Togatog or Megatog, and it's just, or if it loses a base level Atog and Megatog, it's much harder for it to figure out what it wants to do. And so I think, like, having the ability to hold on to those two is crucial.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because Cosmic Intervention definitely fills a lot of different roles. Like, it can protect you against what your opponents are doing, but then it also lets you, when you, like, get rid of your own stuff for Atog purposes, you can get those back, too. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think, hopefully, since this is kind of a recent card, we get more similar cards to this effect. I could see that happening, and... yeah, definitely very
definitely seems here. Like they're trying to do more blink, so I could definitely see more, you know. I think the next Teferi's Protection will look more like this than like Teferi's
right,
Protection.
Yeah, and I think each one of those would be very valuable for this deck's strategy, which I think is cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, you know, this year. Like I don't think they're gonna do a new set of Atogs on Dominaria, but if they did, I would be thrilled, but it doesn't seem like the sort of thing they're going to do. I feel like if Atogs come back, it will be in like a Modern Horizons or a Commander Legends or something like that. Something that is outside of Standard and kind of fan servicey.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm surprised that we haven't seen a new Atog card in at least a Modern Horizons or something like that.
If they gave us Garth One Eye, I think they'll give us more Atogs.
Yes.
they are getting obscure with their fan service, which means it's only a matter of time before my Hungry Boys make some new friends. Because it would be great to be able to cycle out some of these old ones with new ones, or even just to get some like tech that helped bring them to life a little bit more.
I love it. I'll send a couple tweets Gavin's way, and then maybe we can get some in the future. Sweet. Okay. All right. So this next question is probably my favorite question. What is your favorite in-game moment that you've had sometime that you've played this deck?
It's tough because like when this deck wins, it really gets splashy with it. I think. Like, one of my favorite moments I've ever played was with an earlier iteration of this deck. I was sitting on the board, and I had, like, fully misjudged the power level of the game we were going to try to play. And it was, like, us playing against, like, an Urza deck that was, like, really tuned up. And he had just, like, kind of completely written the deck off, as he should have, because he was playing, like, a much more powerful deck. And he focused on everybody else, and then it came down to just him and me, and I had been sort of sitting all game, like, kind of remaining meek and, like, non-threatening while everyone else slugged each other out. And so then when he went in for the kill, I had everything I needed to just, like, it was insane, where it was just like, all right, I, like, sack everything. It's like, fling, counter, Khazal's Fury, counter. Like, okay, like, I'm gonna, like, Essence Harvest, or it was like... I just like kept going for like, you know, each thing that I could. And then eventually was like able to get it. I forget what actually sealed the game. I think I ended it with a fling. And that was like one of the game's first or one of the deck's like first big wins.
I love that. That's it seems like kind of the perfect setup for this. Maybe not playing against an Urza player, but just kind of remaining under the radar and, people kind of are ignoring you until there's only one left plus you. And
yeah,
you've got everything ready to go. I love it.
That is Atog counts on the fact that anyone. It's an interesting position to be in because if you have good threat assessment, you're not going to go after Atog first, even though you know that late game it's like a little bit scarier.
Yeah.
There's just other fish to fry typically. But then also it's like once it's set up, you do then just have to wait until somebody you have to either take out a Togatog first, which feels like a waste of resources, or you have to take out a Togatog second because taking out a Togatog third is very hard. So it's like it's weird timing where it's like they don't want to take you out first because then it just like leaves them open to like a big crackback from the rest of the table. But also if they take you out, if they leave you to last, then there's a chance that you just have like an unbeatable, like, you know, counterattack set up for them. So that's one of my favorite parts of this deck is just the way it has to like be treated at the table and the way it kind of blends into the background until the specific moment that it's ready to strike.
I think that's such a cool part of this deck. I think a lot of the time I don't really think about exactly how a new deck I'm building will kind of fit in at a table, and then kind of how I want to, whether or not I want to just like play as fast as possible or kind of hold back a little bit. Usually I'm just like, okay, I'm going to ramp up and do everything really quickly, but that isn't always necessarily what the deck needs or wants to do. So I think that's a really cool part of this one.
Thank you. Yeah. It's, I love that it allows for a play style that I think can be really appealing for a certain type of commander player that wants to just try and do big splashy stuff without necessarily like having the spotlight the entire time, because like being the deck that everyone at the table is paying attention to the entire game can make it really hard to survive. Yes. And so I think this deck lets you do fun, splashy stuff while also being able to, like, if you're a newer player or if you're, you know, I am like a more flavor forward player. I am not, you know, the line of play is less important to me than like what I'm imagining this bizarre scene looks like.
Right.
And so like, I think it's nice to have a deck that lets me still do the thing, but in a way that feels more like creatively satisfying.
Gotcha. Yeah, I really like that a lot. I think, it makes me kind of want to rethink a couple decks I built recently and kind of how they fit into the group that way. And that also perfectly segues us into the last question I have for you, which is, what advice would you give to other players who are maybe interested in what we just talked about and want to look into building an Togatog deck for themselves?
Yeah, if you're looking to build the Togatog, my first tip is to watch what you're jamming in there. It's five colors, so a lot of people's like first instinct is to just like jam it full of good stuff, and like try to, you know, speed it up or make it like, you know, to put like a lot of power into it. And the more threat this thing flags, the less it can stand up for yourself. It needs to feel like fun, flavorful jank, or else it's like you'll hit a point if you try to like jam it full of five color good stuff where you're like, oh wait, why is it Togatog the commander again? Why am I not running so and so?
Yeah.
And so I think like the key is to keep the threat off you for as long as you can. So you want to build the deck without like my biggest risks in this deck are Dockside and Smothering Tithe. And it's only because I see them as like fundamentally worth it because of the artifact count, but they are tremendous risks. And so like when you are building a deck like this, you want to make sure that you are lessening the number of big risks you're putting down. Like, you know, I drop down like a Taurine Mauler, people are going to maybe be a little scared, maybe spot remove it. If I drop down like, you know, a Togatog or just a Tog or a Megatog, like no one's going after those with a targeted removal spell. No one's going to burn a card in hand and leave themselves open to kill a Tog until it's too late. Like it's just one of those things. So that would be my advice, is like, if the more tech you can find for this deck, and like literally every card can go in it, you know, the more you can find that is like something that people haven't seen before and are going to like underrate, the higher your chances of surviving long enough to do the thing you want to do. And like, you know, my opinion on, I know there's been a lot of talk about like commander philosophy lately, but my opinion is like, it is a fundamentally more creative format. Like it is meant for creativity. And so it is a space, I think, to like, if there was something weird you've wanted to try, like this is a very fun deck to try it in.
I think that is great advice. That also resonates with me. I think just I have all these weird commander deck ideas that I've been, you know, trying to kind of force and make work for a really long time. And the feeling you get when you finally get it to work in some iteration of some commander is one of the best feelings in commander. So
yeah. It's why I you know, go to bat so much for casual play. Like, you know, I think that it's very, very important for there to continue to be a place to be able to play decks like a Togatog, because, you know, if the format speeds up too much, if the format becomes too based around specific staples and like certain like needing to win by turn five or six, whatever, it, you know, these type of decks will go away. And this is what I got into Commander for. And so it's, yeah, you know, I hope that there continues to be a seat at the table for weirdos.
I agree. Yeah, I think we should. I'm totally down to stick to that and make sure that there's always a place for maybe less powerful, but not less exciting types of decks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially ones that are called Having My Friends for Dinner. I think that's a perfect example.
It's anyone who checks out my mocks field will see I have had a lot of fun naming all my my decks over the years. They all have like fun little pithy names.
I love it. Yeah, so that's kind of leads us to the end. Speaking of your mocks field links, I'll include links to all of your content and social medias in the episode description below. But Dan, do you want to plug anything or shout out anybody while we're wrapping things up?
Yeah, for sure. My mocks field name is Sweet Daniel. My podcast, Commander Sphere with Rachel Weeks, comes out every Monday. But you can get it a little early. If you want to see it on Saturdays, you can check out YouTube. We just got on YouTube, so we've been releasing the video a couple days before the audio just to, you know, let people know we're there. If you're a patron, you get it on Thursday, so you get a full weekend to process it nice. Before everybody else checks it out. And then as for me, you can find me on Twitter at It's Dan Sheehan. And then I am an author. I have a book. It's about a year old now. Its birthday is coming up in a couple of days. And so if you'd like, I am not. So if you want to find that, you can find it wherever books are sold.
Could you repeat the title one more time? You just cut out a little bit right when you said that.
No problem. It's called I Am Not a Wolf. It made a list at the end of last year. It made the New York Magazine list for the top humor books of 2021.
So amazing. It is. Yeah.
People who aren't me like it, which is cool as an author. You want people who aren't you to like it because I'm pretty biased.
I kind of like that, though. It's we're kind of here to like make things that we like and put them out there. And if other people like them, it feels good. So that's
yeah,
amazing.
It's an old piece of advice about writing I got was like, if you can't say it's good, no one is going to. Because I have a tendency to be very hard on my own work. And a friend was just like, if you cannot be the first person to like down the table and say, this is a good book, like no one is going to follow suit. And so it is, I think, important to be able to look at your own work and be like, I like this. This is great.
I totally agree. I think that's great advice. And yeah, and so yeah, I'll include links to everything Dan just mentioned. Definitely go check it out. Buy the book at your local bookstore. And all I have, I've got a Discord, Instagram, and Twitter linked below if you want to follow the Fairy Conclave there. And if you're interested in having me interview you about one of your commander decks, just feel free to send me a message in any one of those channels, and I'd be happy to get you on here. So yeah, one last time, Dan, thank you so much for coming on and doing this episode with me. It was a ton of fun. I've never talked about a Taga Talk before, so this was a blast. Well, we've reached the end of the episode. I hope you all have a wonderful day.